Hello, welcome to the 11th podcast of Being Human. Today we've got with us a very good friend of mine, Lindsay Watson. She's also a chiropractor. Lindsay's come all the way yesterday down from Edinburgh to come and look at my clinic and to see how we run things there and how we have the flow with our clients, how we deal with them from when they arrive to when they leave. She runs her own business up in Edinburgh, actually just to the north of Edinburgh, on the other side of the estuary, and the place is called...
It's Burnt Island.
Burnt Island. Everyone's heard of it. They won't need to look at it any further. Of course, it's Burnt Island. Burnt Island is not an island, but it's actually on the coast of Scotland, on the western edge, just north of... Which is the estuary there?
Well, it's East Coast.
The East Coast?
Yes.
Not West Coast. That's right. Fife. It's the East Coast. Fife.
Fife, yep.
And if you were to drive there from Edinburgh following the coast, it would take you how long?
40 minutes max.
Yeah, so not far away.
Not far, no.
And how many people live there?
In Burnt Island, I don't know, thousands maybe? Not that many.
Eight?
No, one. There's not that many, it's a town.
There's only 1,000 people?
Probably, yeah.
Wow, I didn't realise that. I thought there's something like about 8,000 people was in the town. Right.
No, there's only a million in Edinburgh, so we're quite spread out across Scotland.
Brilliant. Well, welcome to the podcast. A few things I wanted to ask you, really, and that's coming down to fly down yesterday and come and see us and see what we do at Daventry. It was the main reason why you were here. What you were looking to get out of the visit for your own business, what you're looking to do in the future. But before we get into that, I was going to ask you a few things about your family life. You were obviously born and bred in Scotland.
Yeah. What do you want to ask? Ask away.
Okay. So your parents both Scottish?
Yes. For the most of it, yeah. So my heritage goes back pretty much at least 80% Scottish and Irish. There is something else in there, not quite sure.
Spanish.
Yeah, anybody who sees me, I don't look like a typical Scot. So there's definitely something lurking in the background. But as far as we know...
Chinese?
Yeah, I don't know. Could be.
Right, so it's coming from your father's side, do you think? Which side is
so,
the most...
So, yeah, probably from my dad's side. As I say, we've done a bit of family history digging. Not too much, but yeah, we were probably there. But like everybody in the UK, you know.
We're a good mix of everything.
There's always something else going on. But yeah, as I say, for most of it. I'm Scottish anyway. I was born in Scotland, lived there most of my life. I have been... In and out of England, different places as well. But, you know, I always go back to the homeland at some point. So, as a lot of Scots do, they get the call in.
Which is your favourite place in Scotland?
Probably Ardnamurchan.
Where?
Yeah, Ardnamurchan is a tiny wee place. I've got friends living there. It's the most westerly point of Scotland.
So, okay.
Yeah, it's tiny.
The top corner?
Yeah, well, not west. Top west corner, or not even that far up. So west... You heard of Oban?
Yeah.
Keep going. It's further up.
God, it's way out the way.
Yeah, it's just still, silent. You go, you can breathe. There's a different kind of air because it's not city air. It's nice.
Well, I've
nice
got some friends that actually did a podcast with me not so long ago, and they this year, they said they went up to look at some houses up on the northwestern coast of Scotland, off an island. So they went to an island, ferried to an island, and had to go to another island. And the estate agents, all the information they were sent was of this nice property. It needed to be totally ripped out inside, but, you know, the roof and the walls were fine. And then when they arrived there, half the roof was gone. And so part of the walls was missing. The people had actually taken away the stone, and it was... So that was a bit of a journey wasted. So that's
what your impression is called.
That's my impression of the western part of Scotland, that it's like cowboy towns, you know?
Well, you know, I don't know, a famous plug, you know Hamza, the wildlife photographer, it was on Strictly.
Yeah.
That's where he lives, Ardnamurchan.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so it is really quite rural.
You met him?
No, I've not met him.
Yeah.
Rural, a lot of wildlife, a lot of space, a lot of peace, if you want that kind of thing.
So, seagulls
nice
and crabs.
Break. Yeah, seals.
Nice.
All the stuff.
So what sort of work did your father do?
So my dad was, to begin with, he was an electrician. So he was an electrician in the mines. So round coastal villages of Scotland, there was a lot of mining back in, well, a long time, but well into the 80s. So yeah, minor. And yeah, it's quite interesting. So I don't know what you want to ask, but
mining is obviously, we've got lots of places in the UK where there was mining, and of course the mining sort of stopped towards the end of the 80s, didn't it?
Yeah, so mid 80s, I remember it well. So had the mining strikes, for a lot of people quite horrendous, for me being about 4 at the time, actually good fun because it meant my dad was home all the time, got to play, got to do stuff.
That's probably the most positive interpretation of the miners' strikes I've ever heard.
Yeah, when you're a kid, you're there.
There was some positive silver linings.
Yeah, there's always something going on. But yeah, it's probably, you know, when you don't really kind of look back at how you grow and how you develop as a person. But having that in my life from a young age, it really kind of has developed my kind of outlook on life and social injustice, and you know how I've grown as and what I look for.
So,
not that I want to get into politics or anything like that, because that's just not the place for it. But you know, when you see people,
you've still got time. Yeah, there's plenty of time ahead of you for politics.
Yeah, when people are not able to work, they're not able to provide, they're struggling, and you know, when you see that happening to families, as I say, my experience was positive. For my parents, quite different. You know, when you don't know if you're going to be able to feed your kids, when you don't want to be a charity because you're a worker, you work hard, and then you're suddenly in a position where you're like, okay, the work, we want to work, but we need to make a stand. You know, we need to join together as they were doing in a union, and kind of try and get the right thing and the right payments and everything. And I say this is again very kind of live again today, is what's happening in NHS. You know, it's a lot of people are looking just to get, you know, what they deserve, what they're working for,
What they're paid into.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, as I say, when you recognise that, and when you're brought up in that world, you do look at the world a bit differently. You know, you recognise when people are not being looked after, or when they're not getting what they deserve, you know. And it's, you know, if you can do something to change that, or if you at least to recognise it and recognise people's struggles, you know, I think it's a kind of build your character a bit, I suppose. So.
Well, you've done lots of things, haven't you, with your different professions, and you're probably one of the few people I know who's got. I think of you, and you get annoyed with it, but the 3 degrees, because you haven't just got the...
It's because I think they're a band, yeah.
Yeah, they're sort of, you know, your first degree was in...
So I did economics. Not known, this is my fun fact, but...
How fun is it?
The father of economics is Adam Smith, born in the same place as I'm from. So I'm kind of like, that should have been a thing. So, so I did economics purely...
What's this guy's name?
Adam Smith.
Adam Smith, okay, yeah.
Yeah. So, purely not by accident, you know, it was one of those ones when you're trying to find out what you're interested in. Went up to university in Aberdeen, did accounts and economics. Hate to say it, found economics quite easy, so I decided to specialise in that. I know a lot of people don't.
Try and help out the politicians, they could probably do with a bit.
Yeah, I know, but you know, I'm not the Chancellor of Exchequer. I didn't go that line, as we know, because we do know each other from a different career. Yeah. But it was quite interesting. It was an interesting thing to do. Did that, obviously did my master's up in Aberdeen, went to art college for a little bit as well, you know, done a bit of that. I don't know. I think,
did you get a degree at art college?
No, I didn't.
Just add that to it. It wouldn't surprise me. I did get it.
Did a couple of years. But yeah, it's one of those ones, you know, you don't want to pigeonhole yourself, especially at a young age. We've all got a lot going on. Try a bit of stuff, a bit of experience, build up your life experience until you land on what it is that you're interested in.
So that was your
first degree. Yeah.
And then before I ask you about your second degree, anyone else in your family that's, you know, obviously quite smart, finds it very easy to get through the
my brother
university systems.
So sibling rivalry is quite big in our family. So my brother is dual qualified barrister advocate. So he works up in Scotland. Did work down in London for a while as well when he did his barrister training. So, you know, academia. Academia has always been a thing for us in the family. You know, well, again, my dad we're from a working class background. You know, it's not like we've been doing it forever. But when you look at your children and moving forward, you know, everybody wants the best for them. So it's like, you know, education, we do this, and they provided so that we could have that experience. I've taken it overboard, as you know, because I will now be in education for the rest of my life, because I love to learn. So it's a bug.
I've got this thing with yourself that this is all down to the weather being so atrocious in Scotland that you've just people spend their time inside and reading books.
It's not just you, Alan. If you look back in history, a lot of the best inventors in the world, best writers, come from Scotland because it is pretty miserable. So what else is there to do? You know?
No, it's, I know that's not true. It's one of the most beautiful places in the world. I love it.
On a nice day, you wouldn't go anywhere else. No. But, you know, you do have a lot of time inside to think about things. So why not?
So the second degree.
Yeah.
What was the second degree?
So second degree, I did my MSc in chiropractic, as you know, because we sat there together through those 5 years.
Through those wonderful
5 years. You know, game changer for us, especially because I know, obviously, yourself, you've done something similar, had a career completely sidelined, went a different direction. And it's what I did. You know, I fell into by accident. I didn't even know, hate to say it, what a chiropractor was before I signed up for that course.
Did they cut nails or something?
I did think, is that the guys that do the stuff with the feet? And again, I get a lot of people turning up at my door saying, can you look at my corns? And I'm like, no, please leave. I give them a card for the podiatrist down the road, you know, we all stick together. But yeah, it's one of those ones I'm like, yeah, don't have a clue, never even heard of it. Typically, unless you've been to a chiropractor, unless you've had that benefit, you don't really get exposure to it. And again, still, I have people walking in the clinic today and go, I didn't even know what you were. I had to YouTube it. And I'm like, that's good, come in. Learn from us, you know, we'll educate you rather than looking at a 5-minute video. So it was one, I don't have the best origin story, you know, I'm sorry, I'm not an X-Man. I don't have one of these moments where I fell off a horse or I injured myself and as chiropractor put me back together again. I basically had, like, if you want to know this, I was working at the time, so I worked in supply operations and I had an audit team in auditing me. And I had to
So you're working in where, sorry?
I worked in supply operations.
That sounds really interesting job.
Does it? So I worked in the drinks industry, which was interesting. I still find the whole process and quite fascinating, you know. Again, it's being a Scot, it's part of producing whiskey is also quite important, I know, I don't know.
Especially important this time of year, being Christmas.
I know. Everyone's got a tipple. So I worked there. That's quite building for me as well. I know, you know, like every experience, every job you do, you learn something, you take it away, you use it in the next place you go. So I did when I worked in supply, I started off again. I had big visions of only working there for a couple of months and then going and making my millions in the big world of London or something. And instead, I was in 14 years, various jobs, various roles.
Within
the same company, yeah. I latterly, towards the end of my career, I was lucky enough to travel around the world with them. So I did a lot of going into lots of other sites, lots of production sites around the world, looking at their processes.
So where have you been to? Which were the most exciting places?
I don't know. So I'm not going to say...
With work.
With work,
with
yeah.
Work. Let's
so
stick with the with
this
work.
Is a different one, because anyone that travels with work, in the beginning, it's amazing. It's exciting. You're like, oh, I'm business class, I'm doing this. You know, I'll have a wee... Of course I'm going to have a glass of champagne on the flight. A couple of months in, you're like, no, I've got my mask on and my earplugs in and I am not talking to anyone. I just want to sleep. I want to get there and I want to work. And then every meeting room that you work in just looks the same as any other meeting room around the world. But, I mean, you do have downtime. You get to go around. You get to see a bit of the country. Most of the experience that I've... So I still have some really good friends from work that I met through that do still live globally. It's mostly experience. You know, it's like everywhere else. You can be in a little small town in Scotland with some great people, have a great time. You could be in Argentina doing the same thing. You know, it is a place. Canada is pretty special for me. I was in Canada in February of all months to be sent to Canada, -37. Wrapped up quite well, but yeah.
Where in Canada?
A couple of places. So I was in Montreal and I was in Winnipeg. So I stood on Lake Winnipeg when it was frozen
Was it how thick was the ice?
Well, I don't know. I heard a few cracks, so I got off quite quickly.
Ah, right. Yeah. Okay.
So again, but quite fascinating. But again, a lot of people, you know, when you're Scottish and you travel the world, people want to know your story for some reason. We like to dance, we like to sing, we like to get involved. So, you know, you could quite happily sit in a pub anywhere in the world and someone will talk to you. So, yeah, so that was a good experience there. Yeah, a few places. I don't know. Brazil, also quite
China,
awesome.
Japan, anywhere like that?
No, I've been to Singapore, and I've been to Malaysia. Again, as I say, every place.
Again, with work?
Yeah, with work, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sort of following the place been, that, like, whiskey.
I know, this sounds nice. I've also been in factories in the back end of nowhere, sitting looking at concrete buildings, you know. I've been around factories in India where there's been, and I know I hate to say this as a person coming from the West, but sitting in an office with no aircon and being like, oh, I'm going to die. Whereas, like, these guys are out working there in this heat all the time, you know. So I've had that. But again, a big part of my job was to look for improvements and where I can make people's lives a little bit easier and make things for the company a little bit easier, whether that was through processes, whether that was through looking at health and safety option. Again, might explain why I ended up down this world, but, you know, looking at...
That's what I'm waiting for, really. Yeah, is the key to how you fell over a whiskey barrel and ended up going to see a chiropractor.
I didn't actually fall over a whiskey barrel. That's an episode of The Simpsons, if you ever want to watch that. But if you've not seen it, Homer using a barrel to adjust patients.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a good one.
There's nothing to this chiropractic thing. That's all you need.
So I ended up, this story, I say, again, totally boring, sitting in my office one day, sore neck after looking at paperwork, had an auditor come in and say to me, you know what, you should go and see a chiropractor. And I was like, okay, what is this chiropractic thing? Looked up on the internet. Next thing I knew, I'd signed up for an open day. Next thing I knew, that would have been in the summer and in the January.
So did you get a chiropractic adjustment?
Went straight into a five-year degree.
From needing it to just...
Five-year degree without even
knowing. So when did you get your neck treated?
First year.
Adjusted.
First year uni. Yeah.
You waited till you were actually
I waited till I was there. I was terrified that I hated it because I had committed quite a bit of time and money to go and do this training. And I was like, what if I don't get this? What if it doesn't work for me? Or what if the other side...
That's quite a big jump, too.
It's a big jump.
Most people would have the treatment, they would have, or an adjustment. They would have been able to see a chiropractor.
It's my origin story is rubbish.
Even having a conversation... No, it's not. It's actually really interesting. Very interesting, the fact that you've gone from seeing something, heard about it, and it's opened your mind up to such a level that you've gone, wow, that's really... So that, it obviously must have made sense to you.
It pulled to me. So again, as I say, I would never have said this is a calling. This is something. I looked at the course. I'm like, oh, I get to learn a bit of pharmacology, physiology. I get to do all this stuff that's quite medical, and I can also come out with a practical skill at the end of it that is useful. So I was like, why not study it? You know, how many things do I, you know, I study a lot, Alan, but how many things do I study that I actually come out and can use? You know, at the end of it. So it was that for me, and I'm like, I'm into this.
It was a walk in the park.
I was terrified I was going to hate it, but
But you did it. You enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm this far down.
Passed every exam. Yeah, it's very different to some of my experiences, but you you came out the other side. And what, you just started your own business straight away?
I worked. I still worked because. At the time,
so you worked all the way through?
Yeah, I worked. And
master's degree and carried on working, travelling the world with the whiskey thing.
And I did a lot of jumping off planes and jumping into clinic and then jumping back on the plane again on a Monday morning. So I can't actually really remember it at the time because it was so fast. I did so much in that time. But it's gave me a great appreciation for how other people work. Also, you know, so people come in to see me, they travel a lot. They do stuff. I'm like, yeah, I know this. This is how I can help.
Yeah,
you know?
get on the table.
Yeah, I've been there. I've done that. I'm not coming to this blind, you know. So it was, it was a good experience. Yeah, as I say, being office based, I've sat a laptop like everyone else, worked too long hours, had a sore neck, had a sore back from sitting in daft positions at the kitchen table. I've done it all, you know. So as I say, I think
laptops aren't ideal either, are they?
I know. It puts me in a good place to recognise what changes you need to make.
So, you know... Just jumping back a little bit, do you have any physical problems where you use chiropractic to manage? Because people think of chiropractic, you're going to go and get fixed. Yeah. You see this guy and or her, and they're going to go bang, 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 and that's all finished and you're done and your back's brand new again. It's not really the reality of how it works, is it?
Yeah, so again, as I say, no, I've been quite lucky. I'm going to find some wood to touch, but physically, I'm doing quite well. I've not really had anything, which everybody gets. You know, I was an adventurous kid. I've done a lot of sports as a kid. You get pick-up injuries along the way, but nothing that has been so debilitating that I've not been able to go about my life. I do, obviously, I'm a chiropractor. I do get chiropractic. And I find that for me, you know, even those little things or little changes, the niggles, make a big difference to then how you feel in yourself, how your body works, how you sleep. And all this kind of stuff makes for a kind of, I don't know, a better experience in life. You know, if you feel better about what you're doing, then you're going to tackle things differently. You're not going to sit in misery. And that's coming from a Scot. Sorry. Yeah. We could be quite miserable. Yeah.
But I think that's the way, how you've explained it, how we enjoy each second of our life, or how we endure each second of our life. And if people are living with pain, then they are enduring every second of their day. And then at the end of it, one day, they're going to die. After enduring all of that, it's like, and if they're Christian, they can look forward to either heaven or hell. So for me, it's like never ends. For me, it's like, well, fingers crossed then everyone's going to go to heaven. But why not get yourself sorted? Yeah. If you've got these problems, go and see someone with any physical therapist or sports massage. People say to me, will that actually fix me? I say, well, it's not going to fix you. It's not designed that way. I have to explain to them, it's for helping the lymphatic system, moving the toxins out of the body. But there's lots of other physical therapists. Well, there's osteopathy, and we've got sports therapists, etc., etc. All of this is good. But the reason why I chose chiropractic is because I've had all of those things. And chiropractic was the one that actually has managed my problems from a very damaged disc in my lumbar vertebrae. So my lowest the disc, you know it very well, Lindsay. L5-S1 is the disc, is the space in between the vertebrae that I'm looking at, which was I herniated that disc and caused me a lot of problems from the age of 20. So I've been managed with chiropractic for 35 years now.
And how did you find your first chiropractor?
I was told about it by a friend of the family. They said, well, why don't you go for chiropractic? And I said, well, I'm going to see my doctor first, because I was all, you know, same as everybody else. So we'll see what the doctor says. Yeah, I'll see my doctor, see what he says, because as far as I was concerned, a GP was a specialist in everything to do with the human body. And that person would be able to tell me specifically what was wrong and how to fix it, because they knew everything. But of course, that's not realistic. And how can anyone know everything about the human body? We're still learning about it today anyway. And how can everyone know everything about the human body and not be able to repair you? So I went to see the doctor, and he didn't repair me. He gave me painkillers. And I was thinking, well, that isn't, even at 20 years old, I was thinking, he's not even trying to repair these problems. He explained what's happened to me, why the disc had gone, carrying too much heavy weight, and the work I was doing at the time was a very heavy work. I actually herniated my disc carrying something heavy up a ladder. So it was very lucky that I got away with that one with just a herniated disc. So he wasn't able to help me. So when I went back to my family members and they said, I asked them about this chiropractor, and they said, yeah, it was a lady in Burton Latimer, which is in Northamptonshire. And there was a lovely lady there that I eventually booked in to go and see. And she had a look over me. She did some adjustments with me, which is just finding out the areas where the vertebrae and the spaces in between them weren't moving. Because if we've got a joint, you know, the space in between two bones, of course, if they're not moving, then you haven't got a joint, you've got a join. So if the chiropractor, what she was doing, was getting this area moving, so it's back to working as a joint again. And as soon as that happened, I got massive for relief. And that's what our adjustments are, isn't it, after all? We're actually finding areas that aren't moving and then helping them move again. So that was good for me. But I had the best advice when I went to see a chiropractor 6 years later. And I said, I'm interested in having an X-ray. And he x-rayed my back, and I, you know, the specific area that I was looking at, that where I'd had the most amount of problems, and that herniated disc, and it was obvious that it had been herniated for the last, at the time, 7 years. And it was, instead of being sort of half an inch thick, it was now down to about 8 millimeters thick. And that was 20 years ago now, something like 25 years ago. And he said, I was very frightened at the time, seeing an x-ray. The doctor, my GP, never sent me for an x-ray. So I didn't know about what it would look like. And this chiropractor said, yeah, this is what the problem is. The herniated disc has gone. It's lost its what's inside the disc itself. And that's why it's a bit like a tire. If you let the air out, it becomes flat. And that's what's happening with that disc. With the gel from the inside, the pulpus has come out, out of the disc. And that's why it's smaller. And this is what your problem is. And I said, what can be done? He said, well, the GP would offer you surgery eventually if it causes enough problems to your nervous system. But the best thing you could do is just keep it moving. And that's all I'd done. And it was probably about 10 years later after that I decided I'd go and get my master's degree in chiropractic, because it was just so much more interesting than the work that I was already... Well, it wasn't work, it was a vocation. I was working as a blacksmith and conservator. So I was also working with material conservation. So stone, I'm also a qualified stonemason, a qualified blacksmith, and qualified glazer. So I'm doing lots of different things, a bit like yourself, Lindsay, but more in a practical way. And I really enjoyed it, and I've been on TV doing that sort of thing, but this was something that made a difference, and I really wanted to get my teeth into it. And it was something which I understood was more academic than anything I'd done before. It was nearly a bridge too far as academia is concerned. I'm a very practical person. The practical part of being a chiropractor is it's fun for me. It's something I really enjoy. I think of myself as being reasonably excellent at. But the academic part of it had always been a struggle. But I got through it. I got my master's degree, as you did. So that's 2 degrees now that you've told me about. I'm now going to ask you about the third one.
So the third one isn't a degree, as I keep telling you, but I did do my postgrad in veterinary chiropractic. Again, actually, while I was still studying for my master's at the same time. So at one point I was working, it's crazy hours, I'm not going to tell you, plus doing my dissertation, plus doing a postgrad. So yeah, it was good stuff. but yeah, so I, from day one, coming into chiropractic, I had an interest in veterinary chiropractic. You know, I wanted to be a vet as a kid, as you do.
Have you had animals all your life?
Well, I've had dogs, yeah. I've been rescuing stuff, as I've said before. I've always been up on somebody's shed roof scratching their cat or doing something, you know, like that's just what you do. But I wanted to be a vet. As a teen, probably didn't stick in as much as I should have, and cruised, as we'll say, which I've done quite a lot through my days. But at the time, didn't get the grades I needed, so had to find a different route. But that part of my life, the part of want to work with animals, want to do something different with them, has always been there. So luckily enough, being able to do chiropractic and given me the opportunity to be able to work in that kind of manipulation field with animals, do something different. So do what we do for humans, but do it for dogs, cats, horses, you know, whatever as well. And it's like, well, why wouldn't you?
So can you go straight onto that course without having a master's degree?
No, you need to have done your chiropractic master's, you need to be a qualified vet. So to be able to...
So with the other people on the course, were they all chiropractors?
Nope, they were all vets. Mostly equine vets. I do love working with horses. They're much easier than dogs, but they are quite big and terrifying as well. So when you're surrounded by people who know way more than you do, it's actually quite nice, because you're like, I know if anything's going to happen here, these guys have got it, you know. So it's nice to be able to just soak in the experience of other people when you're
especially kinda, vets. How interesting that is, to spend that time with those people.
Yeah. And again, they're a group of vets that were really, but by doing this extra, you know, it's kind of similar to what you're saying about GP. You know, these guys are looking at alternative options, you know, so it's that area in veterinary that's also grown as well.
In my mind, these are the best of vets.
What options have we got? What are we doing for your
Let's
dogs
not forget
when they're getting
something.
Into
Let's
life?
Let's use everything we can.
So it's a lot of good guys doing a lot of stuff. So it was interesting for me. It was interesting to be able to, you know, their hands on daily with horses. I know the people a bit, you know, and it's quite a nice combination to be able to learn from other people when they're in a different field than you, but you're ultimately trying to get the same goal. So it's a part that, you know, I'm looking to, I want to specialise further in, I want to develop further. I am looking to do another master's degree, as we know.
Of course you are.
But more focus around behaviour side for animals, so I can focus on that pain therapy side again in a kind of future.
Talking therapy with them, yeah.
Talking therapy, yeah. I'm going to have the dogs on the couch, which they do in my house anyway. So, so it's a bit of that. But, you know, it's like, why wouldn't you? We are a country of animal lovers, you know. It's like, it's growing, and it's not commercial for me. It's like, you know, why wouldn't you look after the whole family instead of just the people in it? You know, it's an option. Make your dog's life easier as it's grown old. And
what sort of things go wrong with dogs, just as an example?
You'd be surprised, but pretty much the same as people. You know, it's everything. A lot of times in athletics, you know, when we're talking about agility and that kind of stuff, they'll have different types of issues. But your dog can easily go out, hurt his ankles, sprain things, do stuff. A lot of arthritis, a lot of hip arthritis, a lot of stuff that we don't really recognise when we've got pups and we're...
You know when you stop the dog in the street and ask them, do you say, oh, I've noticed that you do? They go, oh, no, I'm all right,
and
I'm fine.
What's happening with that back hip there? You want me to have a wee look at that? Yeah that's exactly
it's
what I do.
The normal things, yeah.
So it's the same. I know dogs tend to get arthritic as they get older. And as I say, what we can do in chiropractic and with some of the other animal therapies as well is we can offer them a bit of an easier time of it, you know, while they're in their golden years, which come
too
quickly.
Bitten?
Not in this world. I have been bitten. I was also bitten by your cat today as well. So,
So
I was bitten as a kid. Didn't put me off, if anything. You know,
you're doing a chiropractic adjustment, moving the joints, and there might be an audible pop or a crack, the dogs are...
Relaxed, happy, aggressive,
bitey, snappy, barky.
You tend to do it with support from the owners. What you find mostly with dogs, if they're in a lot of pain, it's quite different, but most of them are trying to roll on their backs and turn around and lick you. So it's a bit of that. They don't stand still. Whereas I say, you work on a horse, it just does what it's told. But it's quite good.
Do they know what you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. It's quite an experience. It's something I think that I'm going to try and encourage you to go down this line as well for your future clinics, develop this area, because when you adjust a horse and that horse leans into you in size or starts chewing, you're like, this guy gets it. And sometimes they even start turning the bits to you that are sore, you know. It's
really,
yeah, it's quite amazing. You're not able to talk, but you can still pick up those signals and do the right adjustment.
So you are communicating with each other?
Yeah, in a way, yeah.
And well, yeah, it is, even people that speak the same language don't always communicate very well, but they are communicating in a way, aren't they? But, you know, if the horse is... Are they like that the initial meeting? Or is it you gradually, you know, you meet them a few times, they go, oh, there's that Lindsay
right,
lady?
Yeah. No, it's a bit of a build. Again, you know, it is very similar to the human world. You go, you remove pain, they're going to thank you for it, you know. And when you're used to getting injections and things as well, and then something else happening, and sometimes they're quite happy to see you, but it's nice. But it's more for the owners as well. So when your 14-year-old collie's running around on the beach and it's not really been walking too well, you know, that's the kind of thing. It's like your dog becomes a pup again for its last few months or few years of life, whatever it is for it, you know. And as I say, I'm an animal lover. I want to make it as easy for them as possible right the way through. So it's the future for me. But
you like people still, though, don't you? Not just
I do a bit, you know. Yeah. The odd one's all right. It's a thing that when this chiropractic bug or whatever it is, when it gets you, you know, it does become part of your life. You help people. You probably, when you look back, you think, well, actually, I was probably helping people a long time before I started doing it with people on my bench. It's just that now we do it in a different way, and you want to spread that. You want to do it for as many people as possible.
Today, it's the same with me. You come and you stayed with last night in Daventry, And then I've had to suddenly jump up during the morning and go and do an adjustment on my day off for somebody, because they're in care at the moment and they need that extra support. And you do the same, don't you? And you've actually had a text message
this
today,
morning.
Didn't you?
Yep, where are you? I'm like, I'm sorry, it's my day off, but I will be back tomorrow. You know, it's those things. And again, you know, like this world, and you might be, like, if I wanted to stay in a commercial corporate environment, I would have stayed where I was, you know, but I've taken a sidestep, as I know you have done as well, Alan, and it's like, this is not commercial for me. It is something like, I'd like, you know, you need to earn a living still, but I'd like to do it where I'm making a change, I'm making a difference to people's lives or their animals' lives, whatever it is, you know. It's a nice way to live your life and feel that you're contributing something back.
Well, I may look at the equestrian side.
Yeah, do it.
And large mammals. It has always been of interest to me, but I've saturated myself with dealing with the humans, and I've enjoyed it. So it's something which maybe in the future I'll be warming to. I'll probably ask you a bit more information about it. Where did you train?
So I trained at Backbone Academy in Germany. So at the time, there's a lovely.
Do you speak German?
A tiny little bit, but I'm not going to do it on air.
Okay.
Yeah, or to you. It's like I don't want to offend anyone with my accent.
Yeah.
I studied German. The course was in English. It was which was fine. But at the time, it was it was the course that I could fit in with what I was doing work-wise as well. They do run a master's training down where we studied, and there's also a lovely course.
At McTimony.
Yeah. And there's Options for Animals. So again, those guys are great. They're up in, just south of Newcastle. Yeah.
Which I would have thought you'd have gone.
It's amazing for me, but because it's just down the road. So I do try and get in there when I can.
So are they connected with the German?
No, they are connected with the US. And again, the reason I did, when I did my training, enabled me to have accreditation in the US and in Europe. So I was like, you know, when you don't know where your life's going, you might as well tick a few boxes.
Yeah, it was my confusion.
Why would I go to
Germany
when
for
I can
this?
Come here? Yeah. And again, like I say, when you look at your network and you're looking for people to even just sound things off, you know, if that's wider and that covers a big chunk of Europe, you know, it makes things easier. Different experiences give you different input, and then you can help yourself or you can grow through that. So
the world is a big opportunity at the moment for you. You don't know quite where. I mean, obviously at the moment you're building your clinic
in Scotland,
and one or two.
So one at the moment, I am looking for additional premises. Again, it's not always the easiest thing to find as the perfect clinic, the perfect spot, you know. When we're sometimes dealing with people that are not as able, some of the awkward buildings in Scotland make it quite difficult to have a clinic in because you don't want to be walking up and down stairs and things. So trying to find that perfect spot isn't always perfect.
Yeah, ground floor ideally. Yeah.
Transport, parking, all the stuff that we need. It's not as easy. And then again, as I told you already, our population's a lot smaller, so we're spread out quite a bit as well. So trying to get something that, you know, actually is accessible and for a lot of people is important. So it's always a big growth thing. You never know what's around the corner for you. So it's about taking the chances when you can.
All power to you. Good luck for the future with your the clinics up there in Scotland. Thanks very much for having you on.
Yeah, no, it's been interesting. It's been good. Yeah, it's another chat just like our usual ones. But
But recorded. That's better.
Just
brilliant. Thank you so much for coming. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
So that was the 11th podcast on Being Human. If you've enjoyed it, then please share. And thank you very much for joining us this afternoon in December, the 22nd.